Welcome to the Gamers Inn. Come on in, pull up a chair next to the fire. It looks like you've had a long journey. I'm your host, Jocelyn, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Ryan. Hello, Ryan.
Hello. You sound a little under the weather today.
How could I possibly be under the weather? I'm a unicorn.
Oh, right. I said sound. I didn't say look. You look absolutely fantastic. Have you done something with your horn? I'm sorry. I'm not supposed to make you laugh.
Yeah, it's gonna be a long show if I just keep laughing the whole time.
Wow. You came here for a good time, didn't you? That's why people come here.
Exactly. So if you don't get the unicorn joke, guys, on the video version of the episode, you can see that my camera is non-existent because I am feeling like a pile of poop that was run over by a larger pile of poop. So yeah, I'm just I don't know. I have some sort of throat lung thing. I think Nevermore infected me through the internet last night while we were playing Heroes. So,
oh, no.
When in doubt, blame Nevermore.
It's a real thing. The internet viruses.
That's exactly what Matt said too. I was like, is there a way you can infect someone from one computer to another? He's like, yeah, it's a computer virus. I was like, that's not what I meant.
Yeah, university degree in computer science. All we learned were dumb puns, so it's unfortunate.
But yeah, so thanks everyone for joining us tonight. I think we're going to dive right in here. Mm-hmm. So Ryan, why don't you tell us, because you're actually playing something that I had gifted to me today.
Ooh.
And I'm thinking of maybe potentially playing it, but I didn't ever finish season 2. So.
Oh, dear. Okay. I was like, what's she talking about?
Oh. I am talking about The Walking Dead. So episode 1 of Michonne came out. I thought it was a like shorter, smaller game, and they're still splitting it into episodes?
Yeah, so The Walking Dead Michonne came out this week, and it launches with episode 1. They have sort of tied themselves to a schedule saying episode 2 would launch in March and episode 3 in April. So they are like, they're trying to become tighter with these releases, and that's about the best thing about this game. Like, it's unfortunate because, as people can remember a few years back, to our maybe first Game of the Year episode where I named The Walking Dead Season 1 my Game of the Year, and I stand by that for that year. It was a fun new experience in a world, in a universe that I really enjoy. And then Season 2 was more the same, was all right, and then the Michonne is just kind of boring. It's not great. It's short, so if you're hoping to find something to do for about an hour, then you're good to go with episode 1 of Michonne. But
I should have just started playing it then.
Yeah, I mean, we can go more in depth next week if you want, once you've had a chance to check it out. I mean, there's really nothing to spoil. The story feels very comic book connected, so if you've read the comics, there's a segment between, I think they say, 126 and 130, where Michonne disappears. And this game takes place during those issues. Yet, for some reason, even though it's set within the comic book universe, they haven't really set up a reason for it to be in the comic book universe. So when you're playing as Michonne in this game, you don't get any connection to Rick and the group. You just sort of exist on your own, which seems like a missed opportunity to me. Like, it's just Michonne hanging out, battling her demons, and there's no, like, mention of where she came from besides, like, a really vague, like, I know good people. I hang out with good people all the time. I don't know why Michonne has a thick southern accent, but yeah.
Oh, is that what that accent was supposed to be?
I don't know. What is it? Like, it sounds like I should have like a scotch of some kind in my right hand and a big. So I should finish that. A big cigarette or a big cigar. No, but the game is just kind of boring. And
man, if you think it's boring, then
yeah,
it's gonna be such a bad experience for me.
Michonne is an awesome character. She's got her quirks, but she's an awesome character. And in the video game, she does do awesome things, but it's kind of the worst Telltale stuff, where the moments where you're walking around clicking on stuff, Michonne finds something and she's like really dry and it's like, that's a lake. I don't see anything here. And then she walks, you know, you walk by. It's just really unfortunate because in the TV show, Michonne is kind of like, she's got energy. In this game, it just feels like she's just phoning it in, which is really unfortunate. But the story feels not at all important. It just kind of sits there, and Michonne, like, I think she's with a group of people, and she sees, she's looking for supplies with this group, and then she gets kind of captured, and it goes from there. And you just, you're introduced to all these new characters, but it's the same typical Walking Dead trope of, like, one of them's crazy, one of them runs a group of survivors, and it's just more of the same, and it's not the good same. You know, you know what I mean? Like, so if you were hoping that Telltale would, like, get out of that tailspin with Michonne, which I was really hoping, this isn't it.
Oh, man.
Which sucks, because I love The Walking Dead, and you best believe we're going to tear into it on Zombies Ate My Podcast, because Lou did not love it either. He hated it. He made it very clear when we were talking in Slack that, this was not a great experience. And it's super short. Like, it's not like it's a mini series because it's three episodes. They also took it to heart and shortened the actual episodes as well.
Yeah, because it used to take a few hours to play through each one of the episodes.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's really crappy.
I did everything. Like, I looked at everything, I examined everything, and...
Did you get all the achievements?
Well, it's pretty easy in a Telltale game. I think you just progress, right? Like, that's the other thing I don't like about Telltale experiences, is that there are no achievements. You just do, you know?
Yeah, there's really nothing to do. It's just...
Yeah.
Straight up story.
It's all in all, I've purchased the whole season, so I'll check out episode 2 and 3, of course. I'm just hoping it kind of goes somewhere.
Ramps up, yeah.
It's just...
You're really selling the experience for me right now.
I know, and it's almost like, wait for episode 2, see how... Because obviously I'm going to play it, and I will happily report back. But episode 1 is not a strong... entry, and if episode 2 is strong, then at least it'll be really easy to get through episode 1, because it literally took an hour and a half, and I did everything. I clicked on all the options, as opposed to going straight to the "this will progress the story" type stuff.
I'm thinking I might, since there's only three episodes, wait for all three of them to come out, and then start playing it.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea.
Just play it all in one sitting, if they're that short.
Yeah.
Tell me if episode 2 is another, like, hour to hour and a half.
Yeah, I think it would work really well as a full experience once they're all out. And I think, you know, it really sets up an interesting sort of look at what Michonne is doing. And she's certainly battling demons. Her two kids, is leaving her two kids behind, is these demons that she's fighting. And she kind of goes, she's a little crazy, and there's some cool, like, action scenes and stuff. But
I don't remember her having two kids.
Yeah, in the comic book, I guess she had.
Oh, in the comic book, right?
In the comics, but in the show, I think she's got one.
Glasses up there, right?
Yeah, sorry. In the comics, I never read the comics. I just imagine someone who has read the comics sounds like that.
I see,
which is unfortunate.
I actually have read the comics.
Not all of them.
Yeah.
Well, then you shouldn't sound quite as nerdy. It's just that's what a lot of people do when they've read all the subject material except for, and then the TV show comes around, and it's like Game of Thrones. Like, I've read the books. Like, I know what I'm doing, right? it's a different experience. But yeah, I don't know. I can't recommend it. It just feels like such a fall from season 2, which was okay. And then season 1 being this awesome new experience that we got in the Walking Dead universe. So, I don't know. It's just such a missed opportunity.
Like, this might actually be a first on the Gamers Inn, where Ryan says, "I don't actually recommend it because it's not very good."
It's boring. It's boring. It has no impact on the universe, because guess what? Michonne comes back in episode or issue whatever. So when she leaves, she comes back. So there's really no, like,
point. So you know that there's absolutely no way that she can, like, die or turn into a zombie or...
Exactly.
Have any sort of life-altering anything, because you know exactly what her story is, basically. Yeah.
And none of the other characters in the episode are going to matter, because, you know, they...
Because they're not in Walking Dead.
Exactly, or as far as I know. Again, and I haven't read the comics, so... And I even think, as someone who's read the comics and understands where this takes place, are also going to be disappointed, because there is no connection besides the fact that Michonne... left to battle her demons. Mm-hmm. So it's just, I don't know. I was really looking forward to this, and I love Michonne as a character. And then you kind of get this experience, and halfway through, I was just like, this isn't very good. Like, there's some cool action bits. Like, they do – one thing they do that's a positive is that they've put a spin on the Telltale action where usually it's like mash Q and then hit E real quick. They actually set up – there's one specific moment. They do it once, but it's a really cool experience. They do it once, and it's like a key combo. So as opposed to mashing Q, it's kind of like Typing of the Dead or Dance Dance Revolution or something, where you have to like type in a sequence of keys, and then Michonne does something really cool. So that was awesome, but it happens once.
Yeah.
And it's just like...
Gosh. I've got to say, like, I've been playing... So I got back into South Park. Mm-hmm. I've played a shit ton of Blizzard games this week, but the one thing that I got back into is South Park, because I needed something fun. I didn't want to go into Walking Dead in case I didn't like it, and I didn't want to come in here and be like, oh, I tried another game, and it was kind of crappy, and Joss is a big downer. So... I went back to South Park because I know I love that universe, and I never did finish it. So I went back to South Park, and I've got to say, my most hated video game mechanic of all time is officially mash the blank button. Like, and just you talking about Telltale totally reminded me. I'm like, you're sitting there in this like kind of like mini boss battle against Cartman, and you have to like mash the A key, and I literally had to put the controller onto my lap and like sit there, and I know you guys can't see me right now because I'm a unicorn, but I had to literally like mash on it like with my whole arm to try to do it fast enough, because like just sitting there like pushing the button wasn't enough. And I was just, and even then it took me like probably 2.5 minutes of mashing that button, and I was just like, are you effing kidding me? Like, can I just progress now? This is stupid. Like,
that's unfortunate.
Oh, it was the worst. And it the mashing the A button happens all the time in all of your different kind of combos and stuff, and I don't think I realized it the first time around, or I don't know, maybe I hadn't played enough other games for it to kind of accumulate to the point that I was like, damn it, mashing a button is not a test of skill.
Yeah, and we've had this conversation when it came to another Telltale game, Wolf Among Us, where there was a perma fail mash of the button, and you're, yes, sitting there like wrecking your controller. And another thing, Telltale has not fixed their damn engine. Fix your damn engine. It is frame ratey. The controller support. The controller wouldn't work. I plugged the damn controller in. I rebooted the game several times. It still would not recognize it.
Which controller?
The Xbox One controller.
Mm, maybe if you try the Steam controller, it'll work.
Maybe. But still, fix your shit. What's going on? Like, when are they going to do a new engine? Is this going to be another one of those years where it's like, well, maybe with Batman, they'll do a new engine? It's like, nah. They're just going to, like, up the textures a little bit and say, look, guys, it's another Telltale experience. Pre-order today. Sorry.
You're salty.
I'm not happy about it. I love The Walking Dead. I love Michonne. How do you mess a game up with Michonne in it? She's got a fucking sword. She's got a sword.
Oh, my God.
Anyways, she can chop zombies' heads off, but, the game is still terrible. Sorry, South Park, we were talking about mashing the A button.
Yes, and Jim in the chat room says, in Mario Party, I found I could mash the A button faster with my tongue than my finger, which I feel like has got to be a lie.
Ladies.
Like,
you know? That seems like one of those things like where you go to a party and say, I can tie a cherry stem with my tongue. Yeah. It's like, well, haven't seen me play Mario Party? Am I right? Okay. That's still pretty cool, though. That's good talent.
It's a good conversation starter.
Yeah.
Oh,
want to watch me lick this N64 controller? No, not in that way. Anyways,
So South Park. I am back into it now. I'm having a lot of fun, actually, and it was the first game in a really long time that I'd actually gotten into that had like min-maxi type stuff where you had to like do all the side missions and get all the XP and kind of like change up your gear and put different modifiers on your gear and all that stuff that I tend to not be a huge fan of in games, but it's done with such flavor that I didn't really notice that I didn't like it the first time around.
Mm-hmm.
And I was still fine with it this time around. But I'm finding that I'm actually, like, doing well at it now, because it's, like, what, 2 years later, 3 years later, something like that, since South Park came out.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had so much more exposure to those kind of games, because we've just been playing things that are kind of all over the map, and especially since watching Matt play some of the stuff that he's been playing, I'm like, oh, so that's how you do it. Oh, so this is what I should do to make combat easier. And just, like, all of that kind of turn-based stuff and gear management that I was never really good at before, I feel like I'm better now, because I was blowing through content that I got stuck on, like, a few years ago, which made me put the game down, so.
Mm, okay, yeah. I mean, yeah, gear progressions can be weird. Like, you're sitting there hitting a brick wall trying to get through content, then, yeah, they don't really set it up well to say to you, like, hey, you need to go buy a new shirt in order to progress through this, you know, and actually take damage. Yeah, that is unfortunate, but at least you're there now, and I don't really remember South Park having a whole lot of, like, RPG. I never got very far in the game, but was there sort of gear that you needed to sort of upgrade as you went along to survive?
Oh, yeah, okay. 100%, 100%, yeah. And it's just, I'm having so much fun, and I just finished the second night.
Mm-hmm.
Second night or third night? Second night, I think. The first night you get abducted by aliens.
This is the South Park RPG? And,
yeah.
There's a night system? I never got very far. I think it's like it started as a, yeah.
Yeah, I think I remember getting much, much further than you ever did. But yeah, so there's, like, you have to do a whole bunch of stuff during the days, like when you quest. And then at night, weird things happen to you. And then day is when you quest, and because you have a curfew because you're a little kid. So at some point, you have to go home. And then so once you complete, like, the main story quest for that day, then your parents come and yell at you if you try to go anywhere but your house. Hmm. And then so you have to go home in a night. And the first night, aliens abduct you and stuff happens. And the second night, you have to deal with the underpants gnomes and everything that goes along with that. And it's I'm 99% sure it was the second night, because I heard people saying things about just in general, like, night number two in the South Park game. So when I actually got there and I was doing it, I was like, okay, this is pretty funny, but definitely not as bad as I thought it was going to be. Like, you know, people had just built it up, like, oh my God, it's this, like, big, crazy experience. Like, you'll never believe it. It's, like, whatever. And I was just like, I don't even know what is going to be happening. But it was knowing the kind of stuff that South Park has done in the past and has no problem doing, I was expecting something way worse.
So you kind of went out on top, right? You were going in like, this is going to be, like, Germany bans this bad.
Yes.
And it wasn't even that bad.
No, it wasn't. Okay. It really wasn't that bad. So
that's good, then.
It was freaking funny. But then, like, I had Matt watching over my shoulder while I was playing, and he was like, oh yeah, this part. I'm like, you're gonna wreck it.
You know, there's something's got to be said, like, going from talking about The Walking Dead to South Park as a video game based on an existing property. That game really nailed that TV show. It took them, like, 20 games to get there, but someone finally did it. And, man, it's just exciting to be a fan of South Park and then play that game and kind of be like, this is exactly what I wanted on a humor level.
Yeah.
Especially since it's the guys that made the show helped make that game and were very well involved. And then there's a sequel coming out, which is what I thought you were playing it, because I think the sequel comes out later this year. Am I right?
I think that sounds right, yeah.
Yeah, so it's, and that's, like, I think they said it was, I don't know if it's a direct sequel or whether they've changed how it's going to work, but I think it is another RPG and it's being done by an Ubisoft. I think it's being done by an Ubisoft studio. I can't really remember. I just remember it was weirdly announced and it was not Obsidian doing it again. So
I'm going to look it up right
you
now.
Look it out. I think it is coming out this year, like probably fall. I know the original one was supposed to come out in the fall and then got delayed into spring. But yeah, it's exciting that there is a sequel coming out, because it's really nice that game sold well, because I know a lot of folks did not get a chance to play it because it came out after the next-gen consoles launched. So, yeah.
Looks like it is... I don't see a release date, but it was announced at E3 2015. And it is South Park, The Fractured But Whole. And it looks like... Coon and Friends, like the superheroes. So instead of being, because this one was very much like a spoof on wizards and elves and paladins and all that kind of like fantasy stuff, so this is a superhero one. Nice. So yeah, that looks pretty cool.
Yeah, and it's being done internally by Ubisoft at Ubisoft San Francisco. So I don't know what they've done before, but it's next gen goodness. So it'll be next gen South Park. You'll get to see them all HD, extra HD, I guess. I don't know. That's exciting. I'm looking forward to that. We'll probably have more on that once E3 rolls around again, but it's awesome that you're enjoying South Park. I need to revisit that game. I don't think I gave it enough time. I think I played maybe an hour or two and I was still like roaming around the city. I didn't even know there was a day night sequence. So I'll have to get on that.
Yeah, once you progress so far during the main quest line, then it throws you into the night phase. Mm-hmm. And cool. You can enjoy all the alien goodness.
Oh, man, the aliens in South Park always freaked me out. Those episodes were freaky. Just like probes and stuff. Not fun.
Oh, man. But yeah, I love this game so much. It is cool. Literally like playing through an episode. So I think I'm probably going to finish it up in the next couple of days. So, good. And I think it was Tweep messaged me on Steam and was like, "You're playing South Park? Why aren't you streaming?" And I'm like, "I don't think I can stream this."
Is it banned by Twitch? Is that what you mean?
Well, no, I don't know if it is, but it should be.
Oh dear. I don't know if it is. That's a good question.
I think nudity specifically isn't allowed on Twitch unless it's like part of the gameplay and the game itself can't like just be about sex or whatever.
So you can say there can be some
nudity.
Doesn't count if it's cartoon? No, it definitely counts if it's cartoon.
Yeah.
People of Twitch, do not go and do, because it would all be cartoon if it was a video game, I suppose. Yes. If it really went down to it. But that's awesome. Well, I look forward to hearing how it ended for you, because the chat room is saying some interesting things. Spoiler alert, I guess. Maybe. I don't know.
Oh, man. So what else have you been up to?
So I started Fire Emblem Fates, the new series, or the new series entry that Nintendo's released Friday. And the one thing I wanted to talk about, because I'm not very far and I'm still getting my feet wet, but the one thing I wanted to talk to you about is the concept of releasing two versions at launch. I don't know if we talked about this on the show, but when Fire Emblem Fates launched, it came out with two versions. One was called Birthright and one was called Conquest. And it's not like Pokemon in that Pokemon has those two versions and you kind of can choose one without really missing out on a whole bunch of other content because it's just exclusive Pokemon and you could mm-hmm. trade with your friends. In Fire Emblem Fates, the two versions are two different stories that branch from Chapter 6, in which you play a character that was stolen at birth, and at Chapter 6 you meet with your birth parents, I guess, or your birth family, and you kind of have this choice of, do you try and save the world by siding with your birth family, or do you try and conquer the world by siding with your stolen family or something? And and it's interesting because the way you make that choice is by purchasing the game. And Nintendo has done this cool thing where they say, like, okay, you purchase your initial path and then you can buy the second path as DLC for $20, which is cool.
And how much is the actual game?
It would be $50, I think. Okay. Or I'm trying to do US dollars, so I think it's maybe 40 and then it was 50. It's 50 in Canada and then it's 25 per path. You Americans, you can look it up yourselves, but in Canada it's $50 per game, but then it's $25 for an additional path. And I chose Birthright, which is the quote-unquote easy path, They kind of say, okay. Like...
I thought you were going to say, like, the good one. No. I could see you picking that, too.
Well, okay. But that's the thing is, yes, it is kind of the cut and clear good one, and that the way it progresses, you are choosing to side with the family that is your birth family. You don't know them. You've only known them for a few days by the time you get to the point where you have to choose. But they are inherently good people. But on the conquest side, your brothers and sisters are good people, but they're misled by your adoptive father. Is it adoptive if you were kidnapped? Is that how that works?
I don't know what you would call that. What relationship you would call that?
Your kidnapped father.
Yeah, your father kidnapper, I guess.
Your kidnapper. Anyways, your kidnapper is a king, and he's kind of like an evil king. His name is King Garon, so it's not at all related to King Ganon. Don't even worry about it. It's completely separate. And he's really evil. And your family on that side are okay, I guess. I'm sure if you went on the conquest side, like, I think it's more about undermining your kidnapper father and working with your family to kind of usurp from within, as opposed to birthright, where you are, oddly enough, trying to just quell a war by conquering them. Because that's the difference between birthright and conquest, and that in birthright, it's the easier path because all you're doing is really just killing everything, as opposed to in conquest, where you're given more objectives on the map, like capture a point or hold a point or something like that. I actually don't know because I haven't played it. But I'm just, it's interesting. Like, how do you feel about Nintendo presenting these two games, but giving you the ability at a reduced price to sort of experience both of them without having to actually go out and buy two box copies? Like,
I would rather just have the whole game in mm-hmm. one. Like, it seems weird and crazy to me, and we seem to just in general in gaming be moving towards this where it's just like I feel like every single company is trying to gouge me in one way or another.
Yeah, it's certainly it's like
why wasn't your game just you wake up on day six or whatever mm-hmm. and you know you have to choose and that's the game, like I don't know, it's so basically, to get the quote-unquote full game or mm-hmm. all the experiences, both the experiences, you have to pay like $75, which would be the cost of a normal game. Like, I don't know, just put it all in one and, you know, I don't know. Yeah.
Well, that's the thing is that it is, being a 3DS game, a 3DS game normally retails for $50.
Right.
So my understanding is that there is two full games of content there. In that you have...
But then, so what... Hang on. Mm-hmm. Because then, you know, how do you define a quote-unquote full game? Because, and that's we true. Had this kind of a conversation last week with, you know, Firewatch at 2 hours versus Skyrim at 200. Which one is more or less full? Is that even a thing?
That's a good
you know,
point.
Like, tell me why you can't give me two campaigns in Fire Emblem Fates for $50.
I think... what qualifies this as a full experience is that it is equivalent in length to the last game that came out. So when Awakenings came out, it's about a 40-hour campaign. And then they basically said that they doubled that for Fates and then split it into two games. Because it does split down the middle in that when you hit that choice, you are going in branching paths and experiencing two different stories. It might have been, and because the game actually already came out in Japan, it launched in Japan as two separate experiences, but let's say that if the game came out in Japan and then 6 months later they released this other DLC campaign where you could play through the other side and experience it that way, that'd be a different scenario where it's like, this is the full game, then this is DLC, but this is literally, they've taken this experience, split it in half. I think either way, you're splitting it in half, no matter how you slice it, because there is that branching choice. But it's interesting to kind of charge twice, essentially, mm-hmm. for what is a
or
large
chunk
of
content. One and a half times, I guess.
I mean, the real kicker here is that I didn't even get to this. Like, what would you say if I told you that there was a third choice, and you can pay another $25 for that third choice, Jocelyn?
I would punch Nintendo in the nards.
Yeah. I mean, considering if they have
Nintendo
left.
Had them. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
because it is a company.
Well, okay. Yeah, I was going more from the metaphorical, like, they haven't had balls for years. I mean, they haven't really done anything interesting in a while. I mean, Amiibo's great and all, don't get me wrong.
I got an Amiibo, did I tell you, for Valentine's Day?
What'd you get? Which one?
I got the Yarn Yoshi.
Nice. Green?
He's adorable, yes.
It's the only one, really. Screw blue and pink. Green's where it's at. Unless you're completing a set, in which I totally understand your need to collect everything. No, but I, for one, love Fire Emblem. So to see this, I sort of see it as a different point of view from you, in that I'm getting more Fire Emblem and I will happily pay for it, because it usually takes a long time for these games to come out. It's just recently that they've been sort of churning them out. And it's also interesting because Fire Emblem
is... So they're churning it out and charging you more.
Well,
so it used to be you might spend $50 on Fire Emblem every 5 years, say, and now you're spending $75 on
$100.
Fire Emblem. $100. Oh, sorry, $100, right? Because there's two branching choices every year or so.
Well, okay, every year. Like, it's not every year. This has been 3 years coming, but no, I see.
Like, last time we talked about Fire Emblem wasn't that long ago.
I don't know. I know Fire Emblem Awakening came out like 2014. I got it.
We're only just into 2016, dude.
I know. Well, that still does not make a year. Like, that's still like 2 years. I think I got it. I got it the day I moved into this place. So it's 3 years, I think. Yeah, I don't see it as turning it out. And I kind of see it as Nintendo. They just made this huge game and they decided to split it in two. And the interesting thing is that Birthright is actually selling better than Conquest, because Birthright is sort of being labeled as the entry path for people who haven't played Fire Emblem before. And Conquest is sort of for the veterans. Mm-hmm. So they've not only made an accessible Fire Emblem, which I'm telling you right now, people die in that game. And when they die, they're permanently dead. And they are named conversationalist characters that when they die, you're missing out on content. So you don't want them to die. And when they do die, you want to throw your 3DS across the room. And it's not easy.
Can't you just reload a save point?
You could do that, but sometimes...
But that's the cheap and cheaty way?
No, I usually do that. That's what I do. There's a command that I've learned and sort of like muscle memory burned into my brain. And then it's, I think it's like LR select, and it just instantly reboots the software, in which you can start over from your save. But yeah, it's by no means like easy. It's not easy mode. It's actually just a fun Fire Emblem experience, but I'm kind of dreading moving on to Conquest now, because if that's like the experienced version of Fire Emblem, like it's going to tear me apart. But it's just an interesting way they've done it. I don't think they would have released like one big game. This is kind of the first time I've seen a company come out with two versions of a game and actually be literally two versions of the game.
Yeah, I can't think of another example of that. I can think of lots of things that have had multiple different potential paths that you could do. Mm-hmm. Like, well, I mean, just because it's right on the top of my head right now, with like Skyrim, you can join different factions and do different quest lines, and you can play each game completely differently, and you know, but it's not necessarily like, say you start the game off as a vampire, it's not like a totally different game. It still has the same main story and quest and mechanics and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of difficult, because most games that come out as a complete package are like the diamond, the story diamond, and that it starts at a point, works its way out, and then eventually comes back in. Mm-hmm. You know, Mass Effect is another example of a game that has branching choices, but at the end of the day, it's got to come back to a single point to kind of wrap up. Or in Mass Effect 3's point, it's got to come back to a point and then sort of jut out in three different colors. But more on that later. But with Fire Emblem, it's a branching path, and there's no diamond. As far as I know, it does not come back to a single point. It's two different conclusions. And then in the case of the DLC campaign that's coming out in March, three separate conclusions in which you choose nobody. And the creepy part is that Revelations is being sort of pegged as the real ending, like the true ending. In which I'm
sure... So doesn't that tick you off?
It does. It's weird, right? It's like saying to me that, okay, if that's the true ending, and we've talked about story before, and that story is really important, So does that mean me experiencing these other stories, are they not as good as Revelations? Like, is Revelations the one that when I play it, it's like, oh, well, that does kind of throw the other two into the basket. Of course I'm going to go with this option because it makes everybody happy, you know? It's weird. It's weird for them to come out and say that, and that this is the true ending, like the true revelation where you will be...
And you don't think that maybe it's like just a marketing tool?
I don't know.
To get you to spend $75 instead of $50? Because I imagine that you can't just buy Revelations. You have to own either Conquest or Birthright first. Yeah.
You have to own at least one other game. And that's the way it works. Because you have to own like a base
game. It's like they're taunting you, like, oh, you like that one, did you? Well, you know, the real good one, that's going to cost you.
Yeah, and I mean, this is all just us reacting based on facts that are like quick facts. Like, we haven't actually beat the game. I haven't beat the game. I don't know whether or not when I go over to Conquest and be like, I can certainly come back and say in like 3 months once I've had time to beat the game and say like, well, yeah, it's two different stories. It's been really interesting. And I appreciate that it's different content, but if it's like a different story, but the same maps recycled, like that's not cool. Like, I want to make sure it's two different experiences.
Yeah.
You know? So I'll come back to it. But right now I'm only playing $50 worth of Nintendo's new Fire Emblem game. About half, I guess, what you could say. And I'm really enjoying it. And if somebody loved Fire Emblem and is worried that they don't want to start with the quote-unquote baby versions, like, don't worry. It's by no means the baby version. It's really good. And it actually throws out some of the old archetypes from Fire Emblem, like the medieval archetypes, like sword and shield kind of stuff, and introduces more Japanese culture, where it's samurais and ninjas and weird, like, paper mages. You know, like that guy, what's his name in Smite? Quang Ku or something, where he uses paper.
Oh, yeah.
Good, you got that. I was worried.
I remember the god you're talking about now. Yeah, the paintbrush.
Yeah, the paintbrush, and uses paper and like ink and stuff. There's cool stuff like that in Birthright. And it's for those who've played a bunch of Fire Emblem, like, this is a cool game to play because it's you're experiencing new types of units and stuff, not just the same, like, guy on a horse with a sword. Yay. You know, so. Yeah.
I knew Jim would, and once he caught up, Jim would tell us.
Yeah, Quang Q, but yeah, that guy with the paper and the pen. And I play him as a Ghostbuster, or I've seen people play him as a Ghostbuster. And it's the preferred way to play is the Z silent? Hong Hu? Hong Q?
I have no idea.
I'm just going to say the Z is silent.
I just wanted to remind everybody that if you wanted to get all of your favorite A-Move stuff on glasses, you can do so by going to bit.ly/A-Move store. You can get all kinds of cool logo-y things with the TGI logo, ITN logo, or I always forget this one, TAC. The TAC logo and the A-Move logo on the other side. There are wine glasses, there are pint glasses. My brain's just not working today.
It's all good. You're doing great.
Oh, thanks. So again, that is bit.ly/A-Move store. Head on over there and show off some of your TGI pride. That brings us to our topic of the week this week, which is Smite. It's coming to PS4. Yay!
We did it.
And anyone with a PS4 can test it. You can go request an alpha code.
Oh, really? You can just jump in?
Yeah. You basically like go to a webpage and then it gives you a code and then you're in.
Cool. And do we know if they're going to have like the linking thing like they did with the Xbox?
I would assume that was literally the first thing I said when Matt showed me that it was coming to PS4 officially. Yeah. I was like, I hope that they have like a one-time something. You know what I would really, really like to see? Because I kind of understand them not wanting to leave it open kind of constantly for you to link an account. But I would really like to see the first time that you open Smite on Xbox or PS4, that's when you have the option to do your account linking. Because, like, not being able to link my account to the Xbox has made me not play Smite on the Xbox at all.
I would go even further and say that I think that they should just have a linked account and that everything you purchase should go across. Like, I just see it as, well...
Well, I mean, obviously, I am fully on board with that.
I said it, and then I immediately thought, like...
as someone who has a bazillion skins and a bazillion gems, and has put way too much money into that game.
And, I mean, I'm cool with like, I understand not wanting to do that because you're limiting the amount of money you can get from the diehards who want to own, like, their favorite Quang Q skin on every platform. But I think there's another way to do it where you basically say, okay, you link your accounts, you have a high-res account, and that allows you to have all the skins that you've purchased, all your gods, synced across your accounts. Mm-hmm. But then there are, like, console-exclusive skins where you, I don't know, like, you get the Master Chief, God, I don't know, whatever the God would be that could look like the Master Chief, you know? And that is an Xbox platform skin, as opposed to what they're doing now, where it's like if you can play as the Xbox Zeus on PC. Mm-hmm. And it's unfortunate that they haven't really found the perfect solution. And I think that that limited linking thing during beta was just kind of weird. They should allow you to do it once, you know?
Exactly, yeah. They should allow you to do it one time. And I understand not wanting to kind of, like, just let it go on indefinitely, mm-hmm. which is why I think, like, the first time that you install and play it should be the time for them to say, do you have a Smite on PC account? Link it to your PS4. And, you know, like, have that be the one time. Mm-hmm. But, like, yeah, I don't know. I think that they'll do the linking again with PS4, because if they didn't, that would be really, really weird. Like, I can't see any reason not to, because they did that for Xbox.
Yeah. Right here is the fact, like, this just says they're currently working with Sony to determine whether it's possible of doing the account copy type stuff. Mm-hmm. I understand wanting the game on multiple platforms and sort of getting it to as many gamers as possible, but limiting... Like, for me, as someone who enjoys playing Smite and has invested a significant amount of money in the PC version, I have zero interest in significantly investing more money in another platform, even if I'm going to play it, like, once or twice. And I linked my account. Mm-hmm. I have, at the very most, my God pack on the Xbox. And if we're going to look at absolute minimums, they should allow you to say, oh, I bought the God pack on PC, I've linked it over to Xbox, and I've linked it to PS4. You know, it just seems weird. It seems really odd to me that they can't sort of come up with that solution. Mm-hmm. And I don't understand why they wouldn't. It goes back to the whole, like, money thing we talked about with Fire Emblem. It just seems like money grabby. And this is like, this is legitimately money grabby, because this is there's got to be a way to figure it out, and I know they can do it. They've already proved it on the Xbox that they know how to do it.
Unless, I mean, and I always hate doing things like this, because obviously I am not a game developer, so I don't actually know how the mm-hmm. code is built on the back end. But it seems to me, if I were to do something that was like an account database mm-hmm. to say who has what, I would literally have my, like, all of the things you could have, and then a one or a zero saying owns or doesn't own. And I don't understand how you couldn't just flip all those zeros to ones once on a PlayStation. Like, it seems kind of crazy that they somehow say you can't do that.
well, even just, you know, like, I agree with you. I am a programmer, and yet I still feel awkward saying that should be easy, because it's not that it should be easy. It's like they've already proven that they can do it. They did it on the Xbox, and they sort of, like, built that system and then let that system disappear just purely based on the games out of beta. And I wonder what their numbers are like in terms of looking at it. Is it clearly just new players coming to the game? It just feels like their console versions of Smite might turn into just, I don't know, the lesser versions of Smite. And that PC will obviously be number one, and that's where we're playing, but I have no interest in playing on Xbox, because my friends who can play it on Xbox won't, because they don't have their accounts there. Mm-hmm. And I completely understand. It's a no-brainer.
Even then, I find the controls, like switching from PC to Xbox, I played through the tutorial with Neith, and it felt really clunky. Yeah. Really, really clunky.
Yeah, and Tombstone in the chat room is making a good point, in that Sony's been better known to work closely with PC developers. Like, if you look at Dungeon Defenders 2, that was announced as a PS4 title, and Sony was all for it. But that's another example of, that's a bad example, because that's another example of a game that's not letting you link your accounts, I don't think. So I don't know. They exist as separate platforms, but when it comes to microtransactions like this, I feel like the best thing you can do for your player base is to give them just the option to jump around. You know, like cross-play is really cool, and it needs to be, it needs to exist more in places where it absolutely makes sense, and this is one of those examples, so.
You know, Rocket League is another example of that, because there's a whole bunch of unlockables. You've got all your XP, all your everything, and I kind of understand, because it is a different experience to play on the PC than it is to play on a console, especially if you're playing with mouse and keyboard, because you're just insane. But if you are playing Rocket League with a mouse and keyboard, like it can be a totally different experience. You can have totally different skill set on PC versus playing on console.
Right.
So I understand having two different accounts with two different levels of XP and ladders and stuff like that. But like, I don't know, all of your unlockables, like, I don't want to unlock everything in two different places, damn it.
Yeah, Rocket League is an interesting one because it's also a different, like, it's also a different monetization platform. And you're right, like, it seems weird to say they have to do this with Smite and then give Rocket League a pass, because it is essentially the same thing, except you are required to purchase the game up front. So I am totally for purchasing the game on different platforms. I'm not against that. But maybe syncing your unlocks, like you said, but maybe not the DLC. But then, like, you're buying access to the, like, give me an option to buy all the DLC at a reduced price on all the platforms, maybe.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't. It's because server things and weird companies talking to other weird companies and not getting along. And It's like,
damn it, companies, can't we all just get along?
Yeah. And then if it's like on a Nintendo platform, it's like, they don't even know, why are you using MySQL3, Nintendo? Why are you doing this? Shouldn't you be using, like, I don't even know, I just pulled that one out of, I don't even mind if there was L3. Like, there might be.
Oh, you're going really, really, really robot-y.
Oh, no. Microsoft, why you do this?
Oh, it seems to have fixed itself.
Just
turn off the porn, Ryan, damn it.
I think my computer was backing up, but it could have been the porn. You never know. Maybe it was backing up the porn. I don't know. But, sorry. But anyways,
you broke me.
Yeah, long story short, are you going to play Smite on the PS4? Or at least check it out? I
will check it out, especially if there's a link. I will absolutely check it out.
Yeah, I don't see it being any different from the Xbox version. But yeah, if there's a link, I'm definitely going to, like, we're going to shout for the rooftops when that link is going to go away, so people can actually just get that God pack on all their platforms. So yeah, cool stuff.
So I just wanted to remind everyone that our Patreon hangout and game night is going to be this Thursday, February 25th, starting at 7 p.m. Eastern. Jocelyn promises not to forget this week, which is totally what happened last week. So if you want to head over to patreon.com/thegamersin, you can see all the posts with all the info about the hangout, and you can let us know what you want to play.
Cool.
Also, we have Awful Good Experience, which is live D&D on Friday night starting at 7 p.m. Eastern. That is going to be over on twitch.tv/Iyagovos. That is Iyagovos. And most of you guys already know him. He's James. He's the British dude who's been on here a few times. So, yeah, head on over there Friday night at 7 p.m. Eastern. So Friday is actually going to be a pretty busy day. Pretty busy day, but lots of podcasting, lots of streaming, and lots of good times. We have a Discord server now, so all the details for that are over on Patreon as well. So again, that is patreon.com/thegamersin. And we wanted to thank each and every one of our lovely patrons who helps us do all of this every week. And I'm getting out of breath, which means, Ryan, you can take the first email.
Perfect. We got some stellar emails over the last week. First is, we're going to start with a softball. It's from Nick, and he wants to know about PS4 games. I've decided to finally get a PlayStation 4 for myself, but have been stumped on which game to get first. I've made a list and been going over it, but can't decide which. The six games that I have been going over are Lego Batman 3, Dragon Age Inquisition, Until Dawn, The Witcher 3, Bloodborne, and Godzilla. I know I'll be happy with any of these, but would like some outside input as well as any other games you think would be a good first purchase. Love the show, Nick. Well, I think I know the game we will both suggest, which is probably Until Dawn.
Yes, I was going to say, in general, I think that when you're looking for a first purchase on a new platform, it's always nice to go with something that's exclusive that mm-hmm. you can't get anywhere else. So, because usually, I mean, if it's an exclusive, obviously it's built to work best on that platform. So, yeah. And I mean, Until Dawn was just such an amazing experience. I mean, I love Lego games. I enjoyed what little I played of The Witcher at the beginning. Dragon Age Inquisition, I haven't actually had a chance to really get into other than that one horrid multiplayer experience.
Yeah.
But it's just, it gets great reviews all around. But Until Dawn is interesting, different. I'm not the only person to say that it's kind of turned them around on the horror genre of games mm-hmm. because it's actually a really, really cool, interesting, and different experience. So. And Until Dawn, obviously, is exclusive to the PS4. So that would definitely be my decision where I would throw my dollars. And yeah. It's, well, actually, most of these titles are at least 6 months, if not a year old. So
yeah, and the beauty of that, and
might
also
be able to get some deals. Yeah. Maybe you can get more than one.
Well, it's funny you mention that. Because right now, PlayStation's offering a Critics' Choice sale until March 1st. In which a majority of these titles are at least half price on the PlayStation Store. So you can get, like, nice. Until Dawn for $30 Canadian. Sorry, I can only see the Canadian prices. So they're probably, which, like...
It's good. It's probably, know. Like, 20 or... Yeah, it might even be as low as 20 bucks American.
Yeah. Until Dawn's on here. The Witcher's on here. Bloodborne's on here. And Bloodborne's another exclusive, which if you enjoy a Dark Souls experience... Bloodborne is one of those. So if you don't like Dark Souls, you probably will want to do a little research on Bloodborne. But yeah, most of these games are on sale right now until March 1st, including Rocket League, which you should probably pick up, unless you have it on PC.
Even then, I find just... I really enjoy Rocket League, and mm-hmm. that reminds me now that the new season has started, I need to actually get on Rocket League and rank up, because you have to do 10 placement matches now.
Oh.
So it's not just like a straight ranking up on the ladder. So I need to get in there and do my placement matches and find out that I'm at the bottom.
I never placed in... I only play with like game nights. So I should probably see kind of how ranking works. You have to do that solo, right? In order to rank? Is that how that works?
To do your placement matches? No, nope. You can do them with... Well, it kind of depends what... Obviously, you have to do them solo if you're ranking in 1v1. If you're ranking in 3v3, you can go in with a party. But there's two different ladders. There's, like, standard, which is 3v3. Mm-hmm. There's, like, a standard solo one, which means you queued by yourself. And then there's, like, just a standard one that's you queued with a party, potentially. Mm-hmm. You can also queue solo into the regular standard ladder and maybe be the third person to somebody's team of two. But yeah, there are two different ladders. But yeah, and you can queue with a party in 2v2. So
okay, that sounds interesting. I should check that out, because I do enjoy Rocket League, and it would be
you get a different rating for each kind of thing. So there's 1v1, 2v2, 3v3, and 3v3 solo. So
yeah, and I don't know what Nick's current...
I know too much about Rocket League.
Well, I mean, you kind of like probably absorb it via osmosis, right?
Yeah.
Like, not that you wouldn't go out and
it's
learn
not even
all
osmosis
this.
It's just literally that's it's always being talked about.
Right, so you have to kind of like, oh no, there's like new DLC coming out, so I have to like research it so I can like have a back and forth, as opposed to just like someone just regurgitating a news release. In case anyone's wondering what we're talking about Matt, and he's obsessed with Rocket League, like to a point where he needs help.
I believe in the top 30.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I shouldn't say he needs help, because then he would retort and say, well, Ryan, what about your Amiibo collection? And then I would say, I'm at least top 30, right? That's not true. If you go to, like, the Amiibo subreddit, there's some people who have built shelves for their Amiibo.
The fact that you know that there's an Amiibo subreddit means...
There's an Amiibo... I almost said there's Amiibo for everybody. No. There's a subreddit for everything. So it's a fair guess that there is a subreddit for... I don't know, your brand of mice. I don't know that was a bad thing.
Oh, you mean like computer mouse?
No,
I meant like
no, I don't
mouse.
Exactly like a brand of mice that you go buy for your snake, and you want to learn like which is the favorite flavor of your said snake. I bet you that's a subreddit.
That brings us to our next email.
Okay.
from John, who wrote in to tell us about his thoughts on Firewatch. He says, it's so funny. In parts of it, I'm totally with Ryan, others totally with Joss. My experience was the hybrid, but I love the game. Like Joss, I felt the quote-unquote mystery was a bit obvious, but I still loved it because I didn't feel like the story was a mystery. To me, it was a story about how we deal with lost relationships, etc. It really nailed that part for me. I'm glad. I am really, and I've seen this kind of feedback a lot in the last week, and I don't know, for me, maybe I was just not in the right mindset. Maybe for whatever reason, the characters just didn't speak to me. I don't know what the reason was, but I didn't get that, I guess.
Yeah, and that's the thing with this game is that it feels like it's one of those experiences that it can easily be affected by just not clicking with the thing that makes it work, which are the characters and the setting. And
I am a huge, huge, huge too invested in movies, TV shows, video games, all of it. Like, I can and do get really emotional in and around entertainment mediums. It happens. I mean, God, we just watched Jim and Pam get married and I cried like a little girl.
Spoilers.
Like, gosh. Oh, come on. It's like a spoiler from like 2005.
Yeah, I guess. But
that's what I mean. Like, I can get invested in characters, but for whatever reason, the characters in Firewatch just didn't resonate with me at all. So, yeah.
And I mean, that's not, nothing should be held against anyone for not really clicking with characters, because there are very popular franchises that people adore that I just can't really connect with. I can't think of an explicit example, but I'm sure if someone said, oh, this is my favorite thing ever, and then it's like, yeah, it just didn't really connect for me that way. It's just unfortunate because with a product like Firewatch, it being talked about everybody and just being loved by all the critics, and then, but critics, you know, there's got to be a critic out there that agreed with you, Jocelyn, and that it's like just didn't connect with me, and then therefore the entire experience just kind of was one failure after another. And
I've been told a lot that I'm wrong in the
last. Oh, you're not wrong. Whoever said you were wrong, like, that's...
No, but you know what I mean? Like, it's just one of those things where it's just like, no, you're totally wrong about Firewatch. And I'm like, I wonder if it's just like one of those things where critics are afraid to be really critical of stuff that's new and artsy and...
Maybe.
I don't know. I feel like... And this is probably bordering a little bit on what was originally supposed to be the whole Gamergate thing.
Right.
But, like, I feel like... Not that they're not being honest, because I know that there's a lot of people that really, like, enjoyed Firewatch. Mm-hmm. But it seems odd when a new kind of experience that's supposed to be really artsy comes out and everyone's like, oh my god, it's so amazing. It's like, really? You guys don't have anything bad to say. Nothing.
Yeah, and that's the other thing too about being a critic, is that you don't, like, reviewing something doesn't mean having a pro and con list. I think that you can certainly talk about all the positive things, and it's really up to style. Like, if you're the type of reviewer who wants to go pro con, that's awesome. But I like reviewers who just talk about the great stuff about a game. And if there is some glaring issues, which in Firewatch, I think it really depended on your experience, whether there was any glaring issues. For me, there was just... We didn't even get into it last week, but I should have mentioned that the PlayStation 4 version, when I played it, suffers from some pretty bad frame rate issues. It's a technical kind of a... It can be a hot mess at certain points. I actually feel very envious that you played it on PC. And for those who have not yet pulled the trigger on Firewatch, buy it on PC. Well, they patched it on PS4. I should really check it out again to see if it's fixed, but I don't want to do that. But yeah, I don't know. It's weird. I agree with you. It's kind of weird that there wasn't one person out there that kind of just didn't click with it. And you got that with Everybody's Gone to the Rapture. I think some reviewers didn't click with it, and that's fine because that game has issues. But I don't think we got it with Gone Home either. I think Gone Home was sort of like a indie darling. And, you know,
same as Dear Esther.
Yeah, Dear Esther was another one that kind of, there was no, like, Now, yeah, like there are negatives about these experiences, but I mean, yeah, it's almost like those negatives are countered by someone, by you enjoying the game, and maybe all those reviewers did enjoy the game. Like,
yeah, it could be. Maybe I am just wrong and way out on a limb, and yeah, I don't know.
But yeah, and again, like I wouldn't say you're wrong. I just you experienced a game, you didn't like it. Like, it happens, you know. I think
not that I wasn't paying attention at the beginning,
mm-hmm.
but I don't know if like lines of text, and this is probably the difference between like an indie thing versus a AAA title. I just don't know if lines of text were the right way to get through to me
mm-hmm.
the kind of the backstory, you know?
Yeah, it seems odd. Like, it could have even been, like, partnered with, you know, renders of the characters or sketches or even, like, you know, concept art type stuff. But some would disagree and say, like, well, I think that text and the atmosphere of the sound design going on there kind of worked really well for you to sort of picture the characters yourself and picture them having these conversations. And it's almost like the game should have started with, you know, take your time with these choices, really absorb what's happening, read it, understand what you're choosing. It's those instances aren't a choose your own adventure. They're more of a, you're experiencing the backstory. And I don't think that was really established because
no, not at all. It took me probably longer than I'd kind of like to admit, probably a good solid minute mm-hmm. of before I even realized that I was supposed to click on stuff. Because it was something like the first sentence. So you basically load into the game and it's this kind of like blurry background with like something like I can't even remember the wife's name now, but it's like you see Jane or something like that is like the first line. And there's no like okay button. There's no like arrows or anything. And I'm sitting there, I tried hitting enter and I'm like, because it's not underlined like a link or anything until you hover over it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, is my game broken? Like, I thought it was loading. And like, I was waiting for like more text to maybe like cycle through or I don't know.
the intro
for whatever
was...
reason, I was just like, it threw me off right from the beginning.
Yeah. The intro is very artsy, and that goes to show like what this game is kind of like. It's not one of those like Ubisoft presents another EA adventure in the line of swords, shields, and laser beams. And it's not one of those experiences. It's one of those like artsy indie experiences, and it's when you know before indie meant like it's downloadable. Now indie means it's kind of like it's an artsy experience. It falls within the lines of is games art, you know, and it's just those games are never going to click with everybody. And I feel like the intro to that game was kind of like sticking in that sort of indie artsy sort of field. And it didn't really like it's kind of like when you play an iOS game and it says like this experience is best had with headphones. It's almost like this game should have started with this intro experience is best, you know, experienced by taking your time, choosing and reading and soaking it all in
mm-hmm.
because
I didn't even until I was probably 5 or 10 minutes into the game kind of realize that was part of the game.
Sure.
Almost I almost wasn't taking it seriously. I was just like, okay, yeah, just like let me get into the game. And you don't really realize the weight that intro sequence is supposed to have until you're already past it. And then by the time you're past it, it's kind of like, I'm not going to go do all that again.
Yeah, I had that experience too where it was kind of like, is this... I've had a couple interesting experiences while playing the game and after playing the game in that... One was, as I was playing the game, Ashley was watching me, and she turned to me and said, and I was doing the choices thing, she's like, are you playing a video game? Like, are you looking at a slideshow? And I'm like, no, I'm playing a game. This is just, like, me choosing, and she was reading certain parts of it, and like, oh my god, someone has dementia, and what is this game about? And it's like, oh, you're a Firewatch person. I was like, oh, okay. And then, fast forward to after I played the game, and she had been hearing the main character's voice over and over again, And I don't think he's done a lot of video games, but he was in a TV show, and she's like, why does that guy sound so familiar? And he's like,
whose voice is that?
Or is that you impersonating Ashley? Or
No, that was like literally the exact same thing that I thought. Like, every time he spoke, I was like, who is that?
So he's, I had the hardest time trying to explain which character, but he's in Mad Men, and he's kind of the Hollywood agent later on in the series.
Oh my God. Yeah.
And he's also the computer guy. I can't remember his character name, but he's also, he has a cameo in the new Netflix series that just premiered, Love, which is awkwardly interesting. I will say I got through it, but it was interesting. It's one of those, like, what's the guy's
cover
name?
Your baby's eyes.
No, well, yeah, but luckily he won't remember anything. It's kind of weird. It's like an NBC rom-com, but with boobs and sex. You know, it's like anything they want to do on NBC, they actually do on Netflix. It's kind of interesting. Before they cut it. Anyways, but that's besides the point. Yeah, he's the guy in Mad Men, and he's that character who has that really memorable voice.
I feel
voice.
Like his name is, like, Finn, very, or? Very similar, like Harry.
Yeah. I think you're right. He's got a hairy look to him. Like, that's what you'd think his name would be in the 60s.
I'm pretty sure that it's something like that. Anyways, we're getting way, way off topic here. We have a huge email from Val about Firewatch, and we have run over on time. So, Ryan, do you want to save this for next week, or should we go through all this?
Should we just put the cap on Firewatch? Like, I feel like we don't want to keep talking about Firewatch. I feel like you probably don't want to keep talking about Fire. I don't even want to keep talking about Firewatch. So why don't we quickly go through it, and then
you know what, you can I'll, don't know if you want to read the whole thing, but you
I'll
can,
go through
you
it
summarize.
Yeah. you kind of stop me when we want to quickly touch on it. So this is from Val. She had mentioned that she had some things to say on Firewatch, so here it goes. She enjoyed Firewatch, but she had some questions as to why does everything have to end with a bang? What is so wrong with Firewatch's ending being anticlimactic? Which was, you know, voicing the opinion I had voiced. When I was listening to the podcast where you both were discussing the game, I think I let out an audible sigh when Jocelyn said that she thought the game's ending was anticlimactic, because that seems to be the word that is mostly associated with Firewatch, and that is kind of sad. She never played Gone Home, but as someone who doesn't currently have a significant... And wait, this is a separate thought. This is why I don't sum up emails. So I can't compare it to Gone Home, but what I enjoyed the most about it was its realism. As someone who doesn't currently have a significant other in my life, it was interesting for me to be placed in a situation where my loved one's mental health was slowly deteriorating because of a disease. Henry decides to become a fire marshal, not because he's a member of Greenpeace and he wants to save the forest. He does it because his current life is shitty and he wants to escape it. And I can relate to that.
See, and I think that, again, like, this is kind of coming back to just, like, what you and I were just talking about with this whole beginning sequence and the kind of lack of understanding that the player has when they're first presented with this. Like, you don't understand the amount of weight that should have. So, I mean, I think I even got up and went and got a drink halfway through it or something. Like, you know, like, I just was totally not committed to that intro sequence at all. Because I kept waiting for the game to start. So I think that that's really what Val had. Is she had a really good intro sequence. She got attached to the characters, both the wife and Henry, the main character, and that just did not happen for me.
Yeah. Again, that intro. You're right. It's a very easy thing to walk away from and be like, "Oh, it's a loading screen," you know, because you see the artwork and you see the trailers for the game, and it is this sort of beautiful forest scenery of you walking through and
well, and really cool. Not to mention, I think I mentioned last week, I actually didn't know what the game was. I literally thought that it was like you have to stand up in your tower and watch for fires. Like, I thought that's what it, I thought it was, like a some sort of event based game, and if you missed a fire, then it could potentially get out of control or something. Like, I thought it was almost like a resource time management type of a thing. And then it started to talking to me about Alzheimer's. I was like, what?
What's happening?
Exactly.
So, yeah, so Firewatch.
Like, layer that on top of the weird beginning sequence, and you can probably understand why I was confused and didn't get invested in these characters.
So, yeah, Firewatch is a very Gone Home experience. And if you've never played Gone Home, it's a explorative narrative-based game. So it's not. So for those wondering, yeah, it's not a fire simulator. No. there are fire simulators that exist.
There's simulators for everything now. Like, you can't blame me for that.
No, I'm not blaming you. And, you know, it goes to the effect of people, like, going in blind to these experiences, because that's what people sometimes do to better enjoy something. And I think with Firewatch, yeah, that type of experience can happen, where you go in thinking it's going to be one of those indie firefighting simulators. Mm-hmm. You know, where you don't do anything and you listen to someone talk over the radio a lot. I can totally understand that problem. So
so Val goes on to say that she thinks it's sad that everyone focuses on the game's ending and misses all the good things it has to offer. Mm-hmm. It was different. The acting was amazing. It had gorgeous visuals and stayed true to the theme of realism throughout the entire game. And I liked it that way.
Yeah.
Val says she would have been more frustrated or shocked if a huge climactic ending broke these themes at the end of the game, which makes sense. I can see that. Mm-hmm. And I didn't necessarily want, like, a big, crazy, climactic ending. I wasn't invested in the game. So then she goes on to say, I don't think it's fair to judge an experience by the ending alone. Insert references to Mass Effect 3 here. I don't know about you guys, but I've been disappointed by endings before in movies, books, comics, and recently games. While I did get the ending that I wanted for Witcher 3, the ending that I got was pretty meh for the 50 hours I put into the game. But I was fine with it because I love the world of The Witcher, and the experiences I had playing the entire game were enough for me to forgive the mediocre ending that I got at the end of it. Same goes for Firewatch, even if compared to Witcher's
oh, man. 50
plus hours.
I want to play Witcher.
Only 4 to complete it.
The Witcher 3.
I think that's enough ranting for one email. Take care, you guys. So thanks for writing in, Val. It's always good to get different perspectives, especially on a game like Firewatch that is so interpretive and narrative. So thank you very much for writing in. You're never ranting.
No.
We always love your thoughts.
it's always, yeah, and Val writes these great big emails that are just really good to read, and even if we do kind of shorten the email just a wee bit, we do read the whole thing, and I think she makes some great points. And I loved being in the world of Firewatch so much so that I went back and purchased the theme so I could have it on my place. Like, I really enjoyed the game, and I really liked the art style and the music and the setting, and it just clicked for me. And it's just one of those experiences that I can totally see people. Like, we had people write in, like, I had people reach out to me and say, like, yeah, I just didn't like it. Just did not like that game. But for every one of those, I had a few people that did say, yeah, they really liked it. So
it seems like all the people that disagreed with me tweeted at me, and all the people that disagreed with you tweeted at you, instead of vice versa, saying, yes, Joss, I agree with you. Yes, Ryan, I agree with you.
Oh, did you have people actually reach?
Because I had people, like, reaching out and saying, like, no, you're wrong. And apparently so did you. So next time, be positive, people. Tell me I'm right. Tell Ryan he's right. And we can all feel hunky-dory good about life.
Yeah. Until the next
note,
Gone
I need
Home.
Lay down and stop talking.
Yes.
Or I might actually just keel over and die, and that would be sad.
That would be terrible. Say that.
If you'd like to visit us on the web, you can do so at gamersinpodcast.com. You can find us on AMOVE TV along with other fabulous podcasts, including The Angry Nerd, Into the Nexus, Overwatchers, and The Angry Chicken. You can follow us on Twitter. You can find me, Jocelyn, at JossPlays. Ryan is at R. Murphy, and don't forget to follow the show at The Gamers Inn. The video versions of all our episodes can be found on our YouTube channel when Jocelyn gets off her ass and actually remembers to upload them, which is youtube.com/AMOVE TV. You can also find the show on Facebook and Google+. If you'd like to email the show and let us know what you think about Nintendo splitting Fire Emblem into 2/3 games, please do so at info@gamersinpodcast.com. So thanks for staying at the Gamers Inn, and remember, tune in next week. Yeah. Bye, everybody.
There's also a $20 map pack, but I forgot to mention that.
Jesus.
Yeah, I know.